What's up, guys? Welcome to the Flawed Dad's Guide to Parenting, the podcast all about the average flawed dad learning to be a better parent. Today, we're lucky enough to be talking to Casey Palmer, a Canadian dad, husband, and prolific dad influencer. Casey has won numerous awards for his parenting blog and has been interviewed by bloggers, podcasters, and just about every media outlet for his take on parenting and fatherhood. Based out of Toronto, Canada, Casey is a motivator in the dad community, and it's constantly inspiring the fatherhood fraternity. Stick around and listen as a couple of flawed dads figure out how not to screw up our kids too bad. Hey, Casey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. And you're not going to succeed at that thing. That thing you just said? No. I like to say all the time that parenting is the long road to the therapist couch. And it might be for them, it might be for me. I don't know which one of us is going to get it first, but someone.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Someone's getting paid.
I think therapists make a lot of money off of dads like us. I know over the past little bit, I've certainly paid a few a handsome sum. So, but that's the whole idea of the podcast, right? About being a flawed dad and embracing it. So, Casey, start off. Tell us a little bit about your family.
Yeah. Well, we are a family of four in just east of downtown Toronto. I have myself and my wife who are 2 months apart, been together just over 13 years now. And we have two sons who are 7 and 5. And I've got to know them a lot better over the pandemic. I love them, but they need to get out of my face. Actually, I was thinking of writing a dad rap album and I have a song dedicated to them, which is called Get My Name Out Your Mouth. Because I'm just kind of like, stop calling me. I don't want to solve every problem you have. Figure something out. You're 7 and 5. You can do this. Yeah. Hey, I love
so
them.
In,
They're good.
In your house, are you the go-to? Like, is it always dad, dad, dad? Because in my house, they don't even bother to call me. It's mom, mom, mom. My name doesn't even go into that.
I could leave for a day and come back.
They wouldn't notice.
The problem is that I'm the fun parent, and my wife will co-sign on this, in that, like, you know, I brought in video games. I brought in all the cool art supplies and tech and the robotics and all that kind of stuff. So they want to do what I do, but they don't have the ability to do it yet. So, like, the questions to get from where they are to where I am is like 10,000 questions deep, and they already had 10,000 questions, and now we're 20,000 questions deep, and I'm just like, I don't have it in my soul to take on 20,000 questions. So they'll play around with stuff until they're hungry, then they call their mom. But I'm just kind of like, by that time, just you hear me shouting at them, and it's never a good scene. But
and so are you on the technology with them? Because I know you're really active on technology, but you know, social media, that sort of stuff. But the games, the video games, that sort of stuff. Are you in there with them playing?
Yeah, I play with them all the time. I'm a non-learning curve type dad, I guess, you know, like where it's like you just like, you know what, like when you think of like when you start to feed a baby or feed an infant or whatever, and you're just like, you can either give them baby food or you can just give them what you're eating. And I'm more that second category. So it's like, if I'm playing Zelda Breath of the Wild, I guess
they're playing
Zelda Breath of the Wild, except they can't read. So it's just like, daddy, what's this say? I'm like, you know how much text is in this damn game? Like, no, just learn after a while.
Son, I can't pause it for this long. I got to keep moving here.
you got to start playing simpler games, like, you know, Fortnite and stuff. There's no reading.
I don't want to be
Fortnite.
Bored. Fortnite would be good. But then you have like, there's so many different things where it's just like, OK, so I'm going to play a game that has an online component. Then do I have to worry about them talking to people they shouldn't be talking to? Even like with Minecraft, they play with their friends. But then when something doesn't work, you know, if a connection isn't working right or whatever, like they come in like bawling, and I'm just like, this is not the end of the world. Please stop. Let's prioritize.
Minecraft's the big one in our house. I've got three daughters, and it is just, and the fighting over who's going to play with who and who gets the Xbox, who gets the computer. It's incessant to the point where I have outright banned it for days. And then it's just I can't take this anymore. Like the emotions, I think it's probably a little different with two boys and you know, both Graham and I are daughters all the way. Is it still huge emotions with the boys?
It's so many emotions. So many emotions. See, the only problem with it being boys is that I'm trying to distance myself from my 80s upbringing of kind of like, you don't need emotions. You're a boy. Stop that. Where I'm like, I want you to feel, but I need you to recognize that I don't feel like you feel because I'm dead inside. So you guys need to stop with all this emotion stuff around because I don't resonate.
So you must have grown up.
No, it's important. It's important. Vent your feelings. I just don't want to do it to me.
I don't want to be with it. Just vent it in the opposite corner. Like vent out your feelings somewhere else in the house.
That's why we brought mom on board. Yeah. She's there for this situation.
So you must have grown up in it. You grew up in the same era as Graham and I then, because exactly the same thing. Right, like just totally dead inside for emotions. Yeah,
feelings are for wussies, apparently. And I'm just kind of like, I'm learning decades later. I'm like, oh, that was incorrect. Okay, how do you undo 30 years of like, it's a lot to try to figure out.
So you did a whole thing on masculinity and your boys. Mm-hmm. Like this is a topic that you've discussed quite a bit.
Yes.
And so how are you getting them past it when you don't have the tools to do it? And this is a, just so you know, this is a regular conversation for Graham and I, because fair I enough. Don't have the tools to do a lot of things, but he keeps telling me I'm supposed to do them. And so
it's a really good point though. I mean, it's how do you prepare them for the world when your toolbox maybe not have all the tools you need in it?
Yeah.
And a lot of it is just empathy, like, you know, trying to figure out what the world looks like through their eyes, right? Like they haven't experienced nearly as much as we have in, you know, any of our cases. And a lot of it is just, okay, if I think of it from your perspective, what is it you're going through right now? And that helps me to reframe things a lot. Cause you know, if I think back to being a kid, you know, if a friend of mine said something mean about me at school and everyone laughed, that's like the end of the world. It's horrible. Yeah. Like that's a thing that you just take home with you and it's just rotten. And you know, I have to remind myself of that often, because even though that might seem like a speck to me, it's not to them. And so it's tough to put yourself in that position, but it's almost a necessary thing to start before you even have a conversation with them.
I can only imagine how hard life would be if I actually had emotions other than like anger and frustration. Like,
yeah, you have emotions.
Yeah. There's three of them. Yeah.
Anger, frustration, and they come out
and horny. Yeah.
Four.
Yeah, four. Hungry. Gotta put hungry in there too. Yeah.
Is that an emotion?
And I mean, you get hungry enough, it's an emotion.
It's true.
Hey, my wife, for sure, it's an emotion. There's no question about it.
Sorry, Vanessa.
She gets hangry there, and that's no messing around. Yeah. Everything's out in the open there. There's no denying it. She's very much aware that that happens.
So
you need a chocolate bar there or something.
The Snickers commercial. The Snickers commercial is relevant to everything.
Oh, yeah.
So Casey, in terms of technology, like we talked to video games, that kind of stuff, you recently did a blog post about Clubhouse and as a dad influencer and, you know, technology, probably likely an addict, I could probably say accurately. Right. What is it about Clubhouse? Like you guys got me on it. I just don't get it. Like what's going on there?
It's funny because when I was looking at the schedule, I'm like, oh yeah, podcast. Oh, maybe we should talk about Clubhouse. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to broach that subject. Oh, but here we are now. Okay. Yeah. Clubhouse, you know what it is? Clubhouse has a better sense of community than pretty much any social media out there right now. So the reason, like, you know, we go to dad conferences or we create circles of fathers in our neighborhoods is because we want to be able to connect with others who, you know, walk a similar walk of life and understand where we're coming from. And with the pandemic, that was all like yanked away, basically. Yeah. So Clubhouse kind of fills that void in that through the power of voice, you're able to still have those conversations with people and you're still able to connect better than if you were just reading, like, you know, I can be as heartfelt as I want in a blog post or in an Instagram post or whatever, but it's a lot different to take away that delay, like that delay, that you know, sure, delay between you reading the thing, commenting on the thing, them coming back to read the comment, replying to that comment. When it's a conversation back and forth, you get a far more profound effect. So I think it's building communities in ways that we didn't really think possible with social media. I think everyone said that social media made things less social. This is kind of moving in the opposite direction.
Do you think because it's audio, it strips away some of the anonymity that you get when you're writing? Like you remove some of the troll aspect of
it's got it.
Of social media. Like you're identifiable by your voice, yeah, right?
There's still trolls. Like there's people who come in. One of the aspects of it. There are. There's cyber bullies. There's trolls. Like there's problems on Clubhouse at the same time. There are people who come in and they come into a room just like screaming or blaring really profane stuff off of a speaker into a room. People will find ways to troll and cause mischief in any facet of life. But for the most part, like I've found a good set of people on there who I, you know, moderate rooms with and things like that. So I don't want to admit this, but I'm going to admit it. So I basically spent like, you know, the last 2 weeks alone, I probably was averaging like 50 to 60 hours a week.
I was just going to say, cause your name pops up on my phone probably 8 times a day. Like, it's Casey Palmer moderating on Clubhouse. What is going on here?
We went like, okay, so you know when you have a shiny new toy, you just can't control yourself. Like, I gotta play this toy over and over again. Yeah. That was us in the early days of Clubhouse, where basically, you know, this one girl, Bianca, started a room 10 days ago now, I think. And the first day, it just kept going on and on because we didn't really put any rules on it. The room ran for like 14 hours. I went to sleep at like a semi-decent hour and let the rest of them run until like 7 in the morning. But like, if you create something, like we're in a world right now where everyone is home. And for us, that's like, you know, kind of business as usual in a way. We still have to take care of our families. We still have to do certain things.
Yeah.
But if you're alone, in some cases, people don't hear their voice for like 3-4 days. Right. And they're just kind of like, you know, they're so isolated that Clubhouse like really did it for them to be able to feel at least connected to other people through voice. Yeah. And so we found that, you know, you can leave a room open for 20 minutes. You can leave a room open for 15 hours. You will still find people from around the world who want to go and engage. And it was fine for the first few days. And then we're just like, man, we're exhausted. We really started like, okay, now we have to like really ratchet down on the rules. So now we do weekdays are from about 1 to 5 p.m. And we'll do like a 4 to 6 on Saturday, Sundays, just to give people the space to chat. And that seems to be working okay. And now, you know, as people on the moderation team of like 15 to 20 people get more confident, they're starting their own things as well, which is helping out a lot. So in short, because that was a long ass answer, it's building community in it with unlikely friends and companions. Like these are people I would not have met otherwise. I would pretty much guarantee it.
That's awesome.
And I remember just one of our podcasts, one of our earlier podcasts that we did was talking about the Danish way of parenting. And one of the things that they do is, this is more for the female side, but someone gives birth and immediately they're in contact with the midwife who then reaches out and says, here are lists of 7 other people who have been given like of the same type of birth dates as your kids. So like they're newborns, here are 7 others in your community. And here's a group that basically you're part of. They all call each other. If one doesn't come to the group in a day or two, like they're on them saying, hey, is everything okay, et cetera. And it's just like a bunch of 7 strangers that just become this tight knit community, which is, you know, it just made me think of the sort of the Clubhouse side of things in that, you know, it's really a way to group everyone together.
Well, it's awesome because, you know, my wife actually did something very similar in that when she had her first in November 2013, she found other local moms like in our, you know, let's say 4x4 square city blocks or whatever, other moms that had their babies in November 2013, and they all became a very tight-knit group, which worked out really well. But I told them all, it's like, you guys know 4 to 5 years from now, we're all going to be fighting for birthday, like birthday weekends. Like, it's going to happen.
Right.
I was right. You I was 100% right. It became a problem.
In November, pure chaos.
I'm like, I hate the stretch from November to December, like between birthdays and Christmas. And it's so bad because my second son is born in January. By that time, we're just kind of like,
you're done with it. Yeah.
Yo, here's a toothbrush. That's what you're going to
hit. He's going to hit like 9 or 10 and be like, here's a stack of money. Just yeah. go.
And so does your wife still stays in touch with everybody?
Oh yeah. 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 Our neighborhood community has been really good. You know, we had, when bubbles were still a thing, we had a bubble of like the neighborhood kids they'd hang out with, and it was really good, but numbers in Toronto ain't so good. So we haven't seen them all as of recently, but for a good while, a good stretch of like 6 to 8 months, they were like all hanging out with each other and all having fun. And you kind of felt like there was a bit of normalcy within the entire like greater effect of everything happening. So, yep, still close, still working out, still don't feel like I'm, you know, in the middle of the city of 3 million people with no and don't know anyone, which would be weird.
And so did
outside,
you?
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, go ahead, Graham.
Outside of, you know, the world, the social group, et cetera, are you doing anything special or different because of the pandemic as a result of being locked down, et cetera, with your kids? Develop any new techniques, et cetera, or is it just mayhem and trying to handle you know, that?
I've kind of gotten to like the idea of like, what can we do that won't have them on a screen all day? Because virtual school is horrible. It was like, I don't want to repeat that ever in my life, but if I have to, so be it. But I want to do more tactile things. So one thing I had to get, for example, is, I have a crafting machine called a Cricut Maker. Mm. And what you can do with it is like, you know, cut out shapes and things like that. And what we wanted to do is take that plus another hot iron press and start making t-shirts. And so I wanted to come up with projects for them that would give them something tangible to take away from it. Because, you know, it's one thing to be like, and now we're going to like do writing and like, hey, let's color in this page, which is fine. But I kind of want to take it to the next level, being able, like, if someone sees you wearing your shirt and it has like all your designs on and everything and they wonder where you got it, you'd be like, I made it. And so I was trying hard to come up with projects of that nature to just keep them engaged and varying degrees of success. But I felt good. So
I think that's awesome. I think it's a great idea. I did something sort of like that with my middle daughter. I set up a gig for her on Fiverr doing voiceover work.
Oh, wow.
And so this last weekend, she got two jobs, one doing some voice work for a song, like for a musician, and another one for an independent movie.
Ooh.
And and she loves it. Like, she gets totally amped up about getting to record her voice and thinking that it's going to go into something. I mean, it doesn't pay a whole lot, but, you know, sure, she made $40 US over the weekend.
Very nice.
That we'll put away, and we're putting it all aside into a bank account for her for when she wants to buy her first car. That's and awesome. So she feels really useful and kind of engaged because of that. That's so really cool. I love the Cricut press idea for the kids, getting them to make stuff. And, you know,
you hear some of this stuff and it's always, I always find it's a world of, you know, social media, et cetera, too. When you hear all the good things, all the different things that parents are doing and like all the creative things, like, God, like a lot of the times when you see some of this stuff, you're like, you know, I must be some type of bullshit parent here. Like, I'm not doing any of that stuff. You know, like, you know, people are hand making, you know, they've got kilns for their kids and they're making full on cups and like, look at what we did. And they're like, I didn't do any of that. Like,
they spent all today.
A cardboard cut out box. I don't even spend all that.
You have good days and bad days. You have days where it's just kind of like, I feel like I can take over the world. Let's do all this stuff. And days where I'm like, either you talk to me, it's on. All right. It's going to be a problem. Yeah. Go look at the screen all day. I'm that's right.
And that's the part that I always find, you know, the social media side of things where, partly the reason why we wanted to start this podcast as well is bringing that sort of that balance back to saying like, you know, sometimes do these things, but hey, there are days, times where we're like, I would rather you just not be here right now, frankly. you know, you do you, and I'll do me, and here we are.
I think they now call that self-care. That's the term for it now.
There's always a proper way of pitching things.
Yeah, that's right. It's just verbiage. Like, you can sway it to whatever you want.
I'm just really working on myself right now. That's why I lock my kids in the bedroom. That's I need to love myself first before. Yeah.
That sounds like every blog that I've pretty much ever read, you know, is that. So Casey, how did you get into blogging in the first place?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Woo. So I've always been a writer and an artist since almost coming out of the wombs, honestly. So I have journals that go back to like when I was 7 years old. And wow. I look back on that kind of stuff and I'm just like, you don't freaking know a thing. You don't know what's coming for you, you little shit. But that's cool. That's fine. But yeah, so I actually started my first blog in 2001. Okay. And I just kind of like, it was bull. It was whatever. Like, there's nothing of substance to it. But I spent that next decade just kind of like learning about online spaces and how I wanted to, like, you know, say things and put things in. Actually, I created my first website back in 98 too for a school project. So that all kind of came together into, like, you know, figuring out who I am in digital space. Mm-hmm. So then by the time 2010 came along, that's when Twitter really started to pick up in Toronto. And I was already kind of like, oh, I get this and I get this. And now this social media aspect, because before that, like, Facebook was a thing, but it was just like, you know, hey, buddy, I'm having this sandwich. Are you having a sandwich? Yeah. Are you having it? Yeah, it was horrible. So I got into the Twitter scene in Toronto and found it was fruitful. Like, there were, you know, meetups to go to, lots of cool people to meet. And then I realized, like, hey, I can write stories about this, and started my blog really around that point. Found, you know, CaseyPalmer.com had freed up, so I bought that and just started writing away. But then it all kind of felt a little shallow, right? Because you're just like talking about like food, reading places you're going, blah blah blah, like who cares.
Yeah.
So when I had my first kid, it was like a natural rollover. I actually thought I was going to stop at first because I was like, I don't have time to do this. And my friend was like, hold on. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of dads doing blogs in this country. You may want to hold on to that, since you already know what you're doing and you don't have that learning curve. I was like, okay. And now years later, it is like a third arm. It's not going away. It's a thing that is like part of my soul now. And I'm like, yep, that's what I do.
And so as one of the early dad influencers, particularly in Canada, how has the space changed over the years, like in the past 7 years?
Yeah, it hasn't. It hasn't. I mean, people are still, I've been on so many Zoom calls where people are still surprised that dad bloggers exist. I'm like, yeah, yep. I'm not a leprechaun. I'm not a unicorn. I'm here. So there's still a lot. There's a lack of awareness that, you know, we're even a real thing, which is part of the reason why I pushed so hard to create like lists of dad creators and like really push that narrative forward. But the entire notion of what a dad has the potential to be has changed a lot over that time. Right. So, you know, you don't see as many tropes of like, you know, look at this dumb dad doing this, hey, online as much as you used to. It has improved. It used to be so much worse in the early 2010s. And obviously before that as well. We have a ways to go still. You know, I think there's a lot we can do when it comes down to looking at dads in general as capable, you know, parents, are more than capable, like parents who excel and will do anything for their children. But I think the more we speak up and the more narratives we put out there, the more likely that is to happen.
Yeah. Graham and I have talked about this before, that the bar for a dad is pretty low to be considered. Yeah. To be considered a good dad. Like, look at that dad. He's out with his kids. Like, oh, how sweet is that?
How many times have you heard that? Like, it's weird. Oh, you're such a good dad. You're walking with it. You're like,
I had a great experience with that once where I was literally on, like, you know, at a Tim Hortons on the way out to, like, on a road trip. And I was baby wearing the younger one. And the older one was like holding his hand, we're in line to get some lunch. And two women behind me was like, oh my gosh, look at, this is amazing. Like, oh, look at this guy over here getting his kids. And it's like, and it's one woman to the next one is like, cause they're mixed. So two white women thought, like, you know, is that yours? No. Are they yours? No. where's their mom? I'm like, she's off getting us lunch at Wendy's and like somewhere else down the strip. He's like, you have them on your own? I'm like, what? Listen, I'm literally going to hand money to somebody who's going to hand me sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And that's all that's going to happen right now. Like, this is not rocket science.
I'm buying donuts for my kids. This doesn't seem...
You know what I'm saying?
Like, oh my god! Sugar and carbohydrates. It's like
all they eat is candy. And somehow...
It's like, if you really think about it, I'm really messing up as a parent right now. But whatever. Whatever.
I know. It's... I know. I've heard that a few times. You know, it's every now and then, you know, my wife will... She has digestive issues sometimes, so she ends up being late a couple times, and so she'll have to sleep in late, just by nature of being up mm-hmm. throughout the night, right? And so, mm-hmm. you know, I'll take the younger one out. She's not in school, obviously. If it's a weekday, the oldest one is going to go to school, and so the other one, I'm just walking around, like, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just trying to buy time, you know, while Vanessa gets to sleep. They're like, oh, you're such a good dad. I'm like, what? Seems like a basic, she sleep, I go out. This is not.
I'm using my legs. Yeah. Like,
the kids are, it's below freezing right now. And the kids aren't wearing anything other than like a diaper. And somehow this is still making me a good dad.
Dad of
like,
the year.
She's basically hypothermic.
I mean, sometimes instead of walking with my kids, I make them run beside the car while I drive to school. So, you know,
look at that good dad. Yeah. He's giving them exercise.
No leash anything. At all, you know?
Yeah.
That's right. So in, yes, the bar for dads is pretty low. And I mean, you've
that was spoken a great on, side tangent.
Yeah. You've spoken on just about every media outlet, particularly in Canada, on mm-hmm. this topic. I got a little weird question for you. Like, what are the weirdest things that people ask you to talk about on, like, you know, the on TV and radio, that kind of stuff? Like, what are the things that really make you uncomfortable?
Here's my love-hate thing when it comes down to having a media presence and everything as a dad creator. So I get put forward as a parenting expert all the time on all facets of it.
Yeah, my eldest kid is 7. Being flawed.
My eldest kid is 7. I don't know what the hell happens after 7. Right. You ask me what an 8-year-old likes to do, I'm like, oh, I don't have an 8-year-old. How would I know this? So it's just kind of like, it's always like a partial story where I'm just kind of like, yeah. So it's like, yeah, we're dealing with like, yeah, like I'm a ambassador for, you know, Children's Mental Health Ontario, which is great because I believe in it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when it comes to like some of the heavier topics, this is like right. middle school, high school stuff. And I'm like, I want to make a better future for these kids, yeah. but I can't talk about what's happening right now. Like, I've got
no reps in here.
Honestly, right? So a lot of it is trying to build that bridge. Like, it's almost like they shoehorn it in. Because like right. it's really hard to find dads who have you know, media presence and are used to public speaking, things like
yeah.
that.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a, always there's the odd fit here and there where it's just kind of like, so it's like, you want to talk about what it's like to, you know, for your kids to have, you know, dealt with abject racism? And I'm like, not a lot of racist 7-year-olds around here. I'm just putting it out there, but we can try and figure something. Yeah.
Right.
Do you find that you feel like you have to be up on all of the parenting shit? Like,
oh no,
all the books and all that kind of stuff? Because you're being asked to like rep being a great parent.
No, you just I didn't even read books for the first one. Like when that first one was coming out, I'm like, listen. And that may be why like it took me a few months to like get into the groove of it. The first 6 months I was kind of like, what am I doing? What's going on?
Hey, first of all, that's impressive though. If it's only a few months, kudos to you.
Month 7, I was in it to win it. I was like, yeah, let's go. That's right.
Yeah, I'm 10 years in and we only started this podcast a couple months ago when Graham started telling me that I needed to, you know, do certain things better as a dad. So it's like, it took me 10 years.
This is portraying me as some type of asshole saying that yeah. you need to do this.
No, it's you know what? It's I'm trying to remember the question. Right, books. Okay, so my wife read all the books and everything, and she was like, you know, this cry means this, yada. I'm like, all right, I'll go with the flow.
Right.
So there's the parenting experts, like, you know, I've worked with many parenting experts who know their stuff, and it's great. Like, there's Allison mm-hmm. Schaefer, who's been a parenting expert for 20 years. There's both Pam Neese and Alana McGinnis, who are sleep consultants who know their stuff. Like, I talk to people who know kids. And then I'm basically like, I'm kind of like, my dad was the kind of guy who, he worked all the time. He ran a restaurant. So he'd work like 12 to 16 hour days, 5-6 days a week. And I only later on in life understood that it was a sacrifice so that we could have the lives we wanted to have and wouldn't have right. to hustle like he did. So, and I get that now. But then, you know, he did that so that I could work an 8 hour job and be home with the kids. And if like, you know, if I'm already like a good step ahead because of my dad's sacrifices, where I'm just kind of like, if I mess up, you're doing better than I did. So y'all fine. And my wife doesn't always agree with that, but I'm just not going to bother trying to change on that one. At
Honey,
this point.
I'm killing the game. I'm here.
Yeah, I usually have like that some sort bar. Of snarky reply. I'm like, I know you're mad at me right now. But how did you enjoy that trip to Mexico, though? No, did you? I'm a great dad and husband. Yeah. Yay!
Did you not listen? I could bust out 10 recordings of people behind me in lineups telling me how good of a dad I am. So
I need to get more than a tape. Seriously, yeah, I need to have. Right. I need to get like unscripted, candid testimonials of how good I am as a dad. And yeah, like, if you need some evidence, listen. Yeah. Here's
public,
the folder. Let's
public
go.
Testimonials.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help but hear you behind us. Do you mind if I record this? Yeah. Or,
I just need it once more for posterity, please. Yeah, okay.
Just walk around recording reviews. Like,
can you tell me your opinion of me as a father, even though you never met me before in your life?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel like you're a good judge character.
Now, but okay, so that leads to another good question. Like, you know, the whole thing, people never having met you, yet you are a social presence, right? Representing this. Haters. Like, it's gotta be, do you get affected by it, or are you just able, like, water off a duck's back?
I used to. I mean, you know, you can get any cross section of horrible people, the more public you get. So whether it was sexism, racism, all sorts of things, all sorts of just horrible, horrible stuff that would come up anytime I put something out, especially if it was on more of a public stage with like a CBC, CTV, et cetera. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You get to a point where, you know, you grow up to be, I don't give a crap years old. Yeah. It's kind of where I'm at now, where it's happened often enough and my circle has kind of grown small enough in life that now I'm just kind of like, if I piss these people off in this circle, okay, that's worth talking about and figuring out. Right. Outside of that, unless I obviously did something wrong, like, hey, I cut someone off in traffic, that person's probably mad at me. But if it's like, you know, I disagree with your views, I'm like, do your thing, have fun with that, because I'm still going to live my life and do what I can for, you know, my family and friends, and whatever else happens outside of that, if I'm not hurting anyone else in the process, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. So you just, it's like practice, like anything else. You deal with it enough times and it just becomes a thing where it's like white noise in the background,
right?
Yeah, that was one of my wife's concerns about starting our podcast is, you know, you're now a public figure doing this kind of stuff. And particularly with the topic of our podcast of being flawed dads, right? Putting out there your own flaws for people to then comment on and go, well, you're pretty fucked up. You shouldn't have kids. Like, you know, it terrified her that was going to reinforce people's opinion that, you really shouldn't be raising children and the problems that might cause. Mm-hmm. But I realized
that with that low bar system that is, we are amazing dads talking about just how horrible we are.
Hey, you guys are amazing. Well done. Well done. Yeah. You're being real about it, which is the right. best part.
It's so,
just ahead, sort of a, you mentioned that you're more the fun dad, as it were, the fun parent.
I don't want to be, but I am. Yes. Yeah. It's just by nature.
We talked about before, certainly one thing that is probably a big issue a lot of the time is the mix between parenting styles. One person, one side of the parent spectrum is often you know, the authoritative or like the rule person, and then the other person is maybe a little bit more lax. It doesn't happen all the time in mm-hmm. parenting relationships or whatever, co-parenting, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, where do you sit in terms of that, in terms of your parenting styles between the two of you? Is there conflict there? And if so, like, how do you get through that?
So I'm going to go back in time to, I think it was September 2013. It was her baby shower. And I don't know if you've ever seen this game, but they put two chairs back to back and they ask questions about, you know, the mother and father, the two parents, what have you. And you'll ask a question and then the person will put their hand up when they think it's like them that's going to be the person who fits that role or whatnot. So it's like, so who's going to be the disciplinarian in this family? I put my hand up and Sarah kept hers down and they're just kind of like, wait, really? Because everyone knows external Casey. The funny guy, the one who's like all about like, hey guys, let's do this. It's funny. It, at his house, Casey, it's kind of like, listen, there's the rules. You follow them. Everything goes amazing.
Right.
You break them. I break you.
Right.
And it's basically like I told my kids all the time, like Sarah's like, you know, the 1-2-3 count system to give them some flexibility and the ability to like right their wrongs. So I'm like, just don't wrong. Just don't do that in the first place and we'll all be happy. And they're, you know, like I come from a background where, you know, every implement in the house was going to hit your backside at some point or another. And I don't do that with the kids, but at the same time, I don't really give them a lot of leeway. So if they've messed up on something, I'll let them know immediately and consequences will come immediately because that's just the most effective way I can think of. It's at the point now, actually, where my older one, he's smart little guy, but he can see the change, like the cloud go over my face, and he's like, "Oh, it's to be real in here." He's like, tells his little brother, "Like, stop! It's about to happen.
Back up!
Stop what you're doing." So it's yeah. That we're seeing the cultural differences between the ways we were brought up. It takes a lot of navigating to figure out, you know, what works and what doesn't. And I think, you know, all these years that we've figured each other out to a large degree to understand how each of us would react to a situation.
Yeah.
Doesn't always make it amazing. There's ways that, you know, I'll see her react to situations where I'm just kind of like, no, we're not doing that. But there's times I'll react to situations she'd be like, maybe you're overreacting. I'm like, maybe. Don't care.
Well, I'm in the fire right now. And this is getting going. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, certainly another thing that Warren and I talked about constantly and just the jokes aside about in the fire, et cetera, is that, you know, I think both Warren and I are more on the sort of quick to, and maybe this is a male thing. I don't know. I mean, there's the three of us talking and it seems like there's similarities a bit there where it's like, there isn't much leeway. It's like, hey, I'm fine this 1 minute, but now, you know, you've crossed the line and now I've, to say gone off perhaps a bit extreme, but you know, like the switch has been flipped. And we've talked about before, like how difficult it is, honestly, like looking back sometimes you're like, you know, I probably could have calmed down a little bit there. Like that was maybe a bit much. It's not all the time, but there are moments where, you know,
here's how I see it though. Like, so Sarah is like your typical fiery redhead type. So like she'll go from like 0 to 100 real quick. Her version is that I've asked them 10 times and by 11, I'm pissed off. So I'm just kind of like, I see what you're saying. I think you're exaggerating. That's just moving on. So yeah, like she'll just like go for like, you know, as soon as she's like done, it's like Krakatoa. It's like, it's on like Donkey Kong. Whereas with me, I'm just telling them, boys, daddy is going to be consistently grumpy all the time. That's just your dad. Go with that. If you do something really awesome and he's happy, well done to you. Yeah. If you don't listen, it goes the other way. You don't want that. So just assume consistently grumpy and then just make your variations when needed. And they're like, oh, so I'm consistent if nothing.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the big thing overall, at least from my vast experience of having, I'm 1 year back of you in terms of my oldest. So I'm at 6. So, you know, I only know until then, you know, you have your 7-year-old problems. Hey, you speak to that right now. Cause, I know
we should talk. We should talk to Warren about everything. Warren, tell us the secrets of everything.
No.
He knows it all.
No. I'm the poster child for what not to do. Like, it's,
oh my gosh.
Consistency, though, I think is, you know, the method, as you said before, it's, you know, people, kids from my 6-year-old level of knowledge, the thriving nature of knowing that something is the way that it's done and it's always mm-hmm. done seems to work.
Set their expectations, right? They set the expectations and they know how to act 70% of the time. I don't know.
Some percentage. It's below 100 and above zero. It's somewhere in there.
Oh, gosh. I'm so tired, guys. I'm so tired of my kids.
It can be really tough, like the consistency and setting boundaries, and particularly when you have different parenting styles. I know it's a big source of conflict in our house. But then as a dad, you know, trying to reframe and calm down when those situations happen. Like we've talked about it so many times on our podcast, like just, you know, you're supposed to take that deep breath before you explode. And it never happens. It's just like, that's not the moment when I remember to breathe. That's the moment where I'm just like headlong into it. To the point where
we've tried to talk about that so many times, as you said. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's
so I went and got my brain scanned by this. So it's called psychoneurophysiology.
Okay.
So they hook up these diodes to your brain and stuff, and mm-hmm. they measure brain waves. And all the different like alpha, beta, theta, gamma, all this kind of stuff. And so they measured mine, and it says what it came out with is that I basically operate all the time in fight or flight mode, like 24/7. I'm fight or flight. Like my brain does not know how to recognize when something isn't a threat.
Your brain has no chill, basically.
It has no chill at all. Like, and so it made so much sense to me. Because anytime there's any conflict between the girls, like they start fighting, screaming at each other, particularly when they treat their mom like shit, I am just like fucking.
That is a huge trigger
going off, just massive, and I'm straight in there barreling in, like not thinking about that my wife has the capacity to deal with this without my, you know, profound expertise in this subject. And I just go in and just, you there. And just freaking out, totally making the situation 1,000 times worse than it needs to be. Right.
Yep.
And, and so what they've started doing is I go in there once a week now, and they hook these diodes back up to my head, and they do like auditory stimulation that is meant to change the way the brain waves work in my head.
Oh.
Like these, they were doing theta waves this last week, where it's supposed to train the theta waves in my brain so that I can still be this high energy, like high intensity kind of guy, but my brain is able to recognize when something isn't a situation that requires that type of response.
Wow. Was this like on a doctor referral or something?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I was referred over to it. And
that's super cool.
I've only had one session, so, you know, clearly it's not working.
Instant results. But
well, look at him. He's unbelievable. I just listened to him. He's so chill. He's so calm. It's this thing. That's this theta thing. This is the new thing.
That's awesome though. No, I really, I really like things like that where it's basically like, you know, not identifying a problem per se, but like, you know, finding new ways to deal with problems.
Yeah. Right?
Finding new solutions that have lasting impacts is really key.
Well, the fluffy, like clinical counseling stuff just doesn't work for me. Like use your feel words and, you know, make sure you're spending your 25 minutes a day meditating. And as much as I believe in meditation and using your feel words, that doesn't solve the problems that are in my head. Sure. Right. Like it's just not that. Graham and I've talked about this before. Like it's like I live in a room full of glass jars where I've just taken bottled up anger and just put them on the shelf there. And like, I'll deal with that one later. But then every once in a while, you know, you walk around in the room and it gets a little too cluttered. They all fall down and boom, like they all go off at once. Yeah. And it's just, you're not in a situation where you can calm down when all that happens.
Right. Right.
And so if I can figure out a way not to put that bottle up on the shelf every once in a while, I think that's a good skill set for me.
Have you managed to acknowledge, to your point, you know, hey, kids, just I'm just in a constant grumpy mood here. So I'm riding that wave of frustration, you know, this whole time. And maybe that's a secret as well, is you just ride that, you know, the acknowledgement side of things. I mean, it's the awareness to me that's always mm-hmm. the big thing is trying to somehow realize, you know, there's something brewing here before I get to that level of just acknowledging that before that switch is flipped. That's one thing that, you know, working on, at least note, like trying to be aware of that somehow, sure. of getting some yeah. notice, because every now and then there's some times I'm not a big fly out of a handle type person, but it does happen. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe I could have done a little bit better there, mm-hmm. and just not regret it, is what it is, but trying to think of like, it would be great if I could just somehow know before the no, before yeah, it no, hits, no. you know, and what do I do?
I always refer back to the line spoken by Bruce Banner in the first Avengers movie. It's like, that's a secret. I'm always angry. Right. And I'm like, you know, I will tell the kids, if I'm ever at fault for something, if something is a mistake on my part, I will apologize to the kids and tell them right away. It's like, you know what? Daddy messed up on this one. My bad. It's like, you guys are right. Let's figure this out from here on in. Their problem, however, is that it rarely happens because I'm usually right. it just takes everyone else at the house time to catch up to that reality, but we'll get there. And then when they do, I'm just kind of like, I can come up to decisions like, you know, I do all the math and thinking in my head, and I'm like, right. Here's my answer. They want to test the hypothesis like for the next 3 hours. And I'm just kind of like, you just let me know when you've got there. Let me know when you got to the answer and we'll talk then, and just leave me out of it. And then they get there and I'm like, okay, now we're good. But now the opportunity's passed and whatever. Yeah. But yeah, it's different thinking styles, different personalities, different emotional temperaments. Like it's a, you know, what's the, when you call it the closed room episodes of TV, when everyone's in a bottle room episode every single time. That's what this pandemic is being, a one long bottle yeah, room yeah. episode.
now we all at some point become smarter than our parents, right? Like, I mean,
somewhat,
yeah. At least feel like it. I mean, for kids, yes, it's like,
we feel smarter than our parents.
At the age of two, I am clearly smarter than you right now, Dad.
Oh, and so having a 10-year-old, we're right on that verge where there's a lot of like coming up on it. No, Dad, I know this better than you do. Like, Dad, stop talking. You don't understand this. Oh, right. Shoot. And you know, you've been speaking with me for 45 minutes now. You can imagine how I react to something like that. with two boys, you know, how are you gonna deal with something like, you know, does that come up in your household? Like the I'm smarter than you or
no, I was going to say with Dad. Two boys, I'm going to deal with that a whole lot later than you are. Listen, girls are smart. I remember in our previous church, you know, we'd been there, I want to say 8 years, if I have my years right. Maybe like, yeah, about 8 years. And we'd seen girls grow up from like newborn announcements up to like 8 years of age by that point, right? The questions they started asking, like they'd sit down, form a semicircle around me and ask me questions that are just kind of like, I don't know if I could give you the answer to that as an adult. Like that's like a mommy daddy question. Like, no, I refuse to answer this. Like, so do you think about death often? I'm like, you're 8. Like, what the hell? My kid is like 7. And he's just kind of like, Dad, if I pick my nose and eat it, do you think it's going to like taste? I'm like, boys and girls, I don't want to generalize, but come on. Like, boys are just dumb as rocks most of the time. I feel like they catch up when it's like, you know, when they're 20, maybe.
Barely.
If they're lucky. So
my it's all comparatively compared to a female still.
If my boys manage to survive and do okay until adulthood, I'm happy. Like, just as the bar is low for dads, the bar is low for boys. Boys, man, I'm just like, I look at my friends who have daughters exact same age, and I'm just kind of like, your life looks so easy. It's like, that's what they show you. What happens inside the house is like, I don't know how I'm still sane. I'm like, fair.
Yeah.
So one of the things in our house that is like a constant point of conflict is the expectations like as you were just talking about, like expectations for boys are pretty low. And my wife constantly admonishes me for having high expectations for not just my kids, but for everybody around me. But particularly for my kids.
Yes.
How do you deal with the expectations for your boys? Like, obviously you probably put significantly higher expectations on them than society does, but do you think it's something that they need? Like, should they have high expectations that they should always be striving to achieve that are never accomplishable, or should just be like, yeah, no, here's your participation ribbon.
You're about to hear a highly unpopular view I rarely share in public. So let's go.
I asked the right question.
Yeah. Well done.
I had a realization recently that my kids aren't me, and in the most tangible way possible. So like I was, you know, a gifted kid. I went to private school and all this other stuff because I showed a lot of promise at a young age. Apparently I was like, my mom loves telling stories about me as a kid, which I'm like, that's not me anymore, but whatever. This is like the time she is frozen in mentally for me. So she talks about how I was counting by the age of like, you know, 18 months or something. And then I was reading by the time I was 2.5 or some ridiculous crap. But by the time I was 8, right, I was winning spelling bees at a provincial level. And I just kind of like did all this crazy crap of those kind of like, you know, those precocious children who are just kind of like, they have all these skills and abilities, don't know where they got it from. I'm still working on my kid's writing. He's 7. Like, I'm just like, you know, make sure you spell that word right. And it just kind of like, I had to really think about the fact that like, they aren't me. And the difference though, is that even though he's an average 7-year-old, when it comes down to academic prowess, he's one of the most caring and empathetic kids you'll ever meet. He is the kind of kid who you are playing in a group of kids at school. You see one kid left out, he'll leave the group to go hang out with that kid, than to stay with the cool kids because he's an empath.
Yeah,
he's an empath. And it's really hard for me to wrap my head around that because, like I said, I'm dead inside. However, he's not. And I'm not about to snuff out that flame just because like his grades aren't, you know, where they're supposed to be or whatever, right?
If you were to choose, right, with your 7-year-old level of knowledge, et cetera, and just life skills as well, you know, where are you in terms of, if you were to fabricate some type of, you know, perfect behavior or child individual, how would you construct them? Would you weigh more on the intelligence side, or would you go more on the social empath side? Like, where, if you were to put together,
he's perfect the way he is. Honestly, his toolkit, his skill set is going to get him so much farther in life than it got me. I did well because book smarts, and I'm, you know, I learn social skills,
right?
Like, it's something I had to learn as a teenager and young adult and develop it very, very actively. Whereas with him, it's just, that's who he is. He wants to be around friends. He's an extrovert, and that's going to do him well as long as he doesn't get, like, you know, around the wrong people who want to take advantage of that. So my skill, I guess the thing I can offer him as his dad is just to like, keep an eye out, make sure he doesn't like have anyone around him who's going to like, you know, steer him wrong, and that he can express and be himself as much as possible in those spaces without me getting in the way of that. So I'm just like, you are who you are. I'm cool with that. If you get a bad grade or something, I'll help you and we'll try to figure it out, but I can't live your life for you. So I need you to be empowered with what I can give you so that you live the best life possible.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to say you have to bash your kid.
No, it's cool. I'm just saying now my five-year-old just wants to watch world burn. He's just like a jerk. He's just kind of like, is everyone happy? Not anymore. I'm like, so him, I don't know yet. 7-year-old, I'm like, I get you. You're good. Yeah. The 5-year-old, I'm like,
well, and there's a lot. There's a lot for kids to figure out at 7 and 5. Still, I mean, there's so much more. You know, I've always thought, you know, for myself, not that, of course, you can't change the kids. They are for the most part, right? We've talked about this before, Warren, about nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
We fall on different opinions sometimes.
Very.
on that side of things. But foregoing that, social aspects, I mean, that's sort of, to me, like that's the first and foremost thing is really driving that and getting to know people. I mean, as we get older in life, it seems like just the more people that you know, the more social circles you're in, the more opportunities you have in general, and the more open things are. And it just, it's weird how that works. And just the way the world works, it seems. And so having more social and empathy and being able to be open and extroverted things seems to cater towards being more on the positive side than negative. So if I were to construct someone, I would hope that they were a lot more social, get out, let's get together. Then, I mean, academics are important. You need to get going, but I mean,
to a degree,
I mean, clearly they have looking at you, you know, academics don't really matter.
Right. Like there's good and there's bad with it. Like, you know, I have friends who turned out to be lawyers and doctors, but when it comes down to like their social skills or like how they integrate with the world, they're closed off and isolated just because they didn't give themselves a chance to know people from different walks of life and be empathetic to so many different kinds of, you know, situations. And if you can't do that, like you're really closing off, like you said, your opportunities, you're closing off the ability to go out and try new things because you're just kind of like, I like this small sliver of the universe when the entire world is like a vast spectrum of what's out there. So I'd rather him have the ability to go out and be willing to experiment, try things out, and, you know, understand that the world is a big and complex and ever-changing place.
Yeah. That's I think that's dead on. There's a book called Humans Are Underrated by a guy named Jeff Colvin, and he writes about how technology is going to interrupt professions in the future, and basically says that the only professions that are going to survive technology are ones that require empathy. Because the ability to influence other people's decisions is going to be the most valuable skill set.
And problem solving.
And problem solving, yeah. Yeah.
So when you can ask Google what, like 3,445 times 2,110, whatever, and they're able to spit numbers out like that. I mean, boy, that's the world now. What's going to be like in 10 years from now? Yeah. But how to solve a problem, boy, that's still a complex problem.
It is, definitely.
Yeah, particularly an emotional one. And raising three daughters, that seems to be the only problems in my household.
Yeah, getting those reps in for sure.
So, you know, you've had the opportunity to speak to a lot of people. You know, you've been on a lot of podcasts, you've been all over the media, that sort of stuff. Are there a couple people that, you know, are on your bucket list of people that you would want to talk to, whether it be about parenting or about anything else? Like, who would be your top three people that you'd like to at some point have a conversation with?
I don't even know if I have three, to be honest. I only have one.
Who's that?
Oprah.
Okay. And so explain.
Yeah. So talk to her about parenting.
I talked to her about anything, really, to be honest. No, it's because we grew up with a lot of Oprah in my house. My mom was a huge fan of, you know, she'd watch Oprah, then she'd watch her soaps. And that would be the way that the schedule would work in the afternoon when I get home from school. And it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, I'm kind of, on one hand, I'm done trying to prove anything to my parents because we understand each other and they understand that, like, you know, I show them like, hey, so this happened. It's like, that doesn't happen to normal people. I'm like, I know. But on the other, it's like, there's still a part of me where it's just kind of like, wouldn't it be really cool if, you know, this like did this and I was able to like meet Oprah and have my mom meet Oprah and all that kind of stuff. So I think, like, you know, I think that when it comes down to parenting stories, you get good parenting stories from anyone. It could be from someone who, you know, doesn't have a dime to their name, has never accomplished anything in like the entire public, you know, scene of things too. Okay, I'll say Obama would be pretty cool too. I'd love to talk to Obama. He's a cool dude. Yes. But like, I'll talk to anyone about parenting at any time just because I feel like it's one of those universal things that ties us together so well. And actually that's a good segue to the book I'm writing. So I'm writing a book on, an independent publishing house, Dundurn Press here in Toronto. I think it's the oldest publishing house in Toronto. They reached out in the end of the summer for me to write a book about Black fatherhood. And so I started with it at first and like, well, what's my experience and what's this? But then I realized the more I worked on it, the more diverse my thinking got on it, because there's me, you know, in a mixed race relationship as a dad. There's, you know, same sex dads. You have dads who are polyamorous. You have single dads. You have divorcees, widowers. There's dads who had dads who didn't have dads. There's like this, it's a huge cross section of all these different lifestyles that come together to show the breadth and diversity of what Black fatherhood is, and mm-hmm. you know, how it gets represented in the media often is just kind of like as one thing.
Right.
And so in that, like, you know, it kind of does go back to the entire idea of like talking to all sorts of different people, because I realized that the story and narratives that I share, you know, on my blog and social media, they're well crafted from years and years of practice, but they're still from my perspective alone. I'd rather be able to like start working on projects that take multiple perspectives and put it all together into one salient narrative that really helps people to understand the different facets of a subject matter. So mm-hmm.
very cool.
I don't even know how I got there. I just kind of went on a winding path.
Good for you. I mean, that's
so when can we expect to see the book?
Not for a long ass time. So the manuscript is due June, and then okay. the release date is supposed to be June next year. I just put in, well, I had the title for a while, but I put it into the publisher to be like, I want to go with this title. And then they fought me on it a couple of times. But no, I want this title. This title is going to happen. So the title I'm trying to go with is Black Dad Matters. So,
okay.
you know, just to be a little like cheeky, but also like it's matters pertaining to Black dads. What are you talking about? But it's something that's kind of, you know, I didn't expect to be writing a book this early on in my life. Like there's a lot of things that have happened as me being a dad creator where things happen a lot earlier on than I expected them to, because, you know, lack of perspective of the entire industry, yada, yada, yada. But the opportunity presented itself. And then as, you know, the subject matter was given to me, I took about 3-4 weeks to sit down, write up the proposal, really think it through. And I was like, you know what? This is something that is going to be like everything I've been trying to say for the last decade, all wrapped up in one thing to say, this is what I think and feel. And probably I will have to write another one like 7 years down the road when I'm just kind of like, so you know, all the stuff I thought of when I was when I had a 7-year-old, screw all that.
Don't do anything that I recommended.
He didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Here's a new one. All right.
First buy that old book so you can know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So you have to, I'm going to make direct references to it so that you know what was going on. Then read this book instead.
So in terms of Oprah, I'm going to return back to this for a second. What have you done in order to get on, like to actually have a conversation with her? Like, have you taken a step forward with it at all? Or have you moved forward with your dream of chatting with her? Or is it just like a pipe dream sort of thing?
Pipe dream type thing. However,
okay. I mean, if Oprah's listening to this, then, you know, you've got a fan in Casey. And he's easy to find, CaseyPalmer.com.
All over. You literally Google Casey Palmer in the first results. So there you go. So it works out really well. I think with the more media I do and the more things that happen, I've been really, really huge on search engine optimization as of late too. Mm-hmm. So the more I work at it, the more I finesse what I do, the more those connections will happen. I've seen a lot of emails come in my way as of late that show me that I'm doing the right thing and getting to bigger stages. I actually had I was part of a piece that came out in National Geographic yesterday. So things are happening.
Very cool. That's awesome. Well, we've been chatting for a little over an hour now, so I know it's late where you are. So we'll start to shut it down here. So Casey, thank you so much for joining us. Great conversation. If anybody's looking for your blog and a wide range, the list of all the things that you've showed up on in terms of podcasts and the media outlets, those sorts of things, CaseyPalmer.com is the address for that. Thank you again for taking the time to chat with us. We really appreciate it. Yeah, Graham and I really enjoyed our chat. Laughed a heck of a lot. We appreciate that. Anytime you can find laughter when you're dealing with kids during a pandemic, it's a good excuse. It's a good use of time. So thank you. Hope you have a wonderful evening.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.